Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on Money is the Root of All Evil, right after this. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? Well, it's pretty obvious that something is wrong with them because they have been banned from our public schools, public institutions, and our national consciousness. Now, instead of these ten simple, time-tested laws, we see the ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place, and they teach these ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, public institutions. We've made them a part of our national psyche. You know, this is a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years. And are you aware that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but she can have an abortion? An abortion ranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent. That's why I contend that the solution to this moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Now let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention in 1787 practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments, and they put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. And there's still one school left in America that teaches this entire Mosaic Law, that is the Ten Commandments and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the 33 articulable benefits that we receive for their observance. You know, every law has a penalty, and you don't have to know what that penalty is to suffer its effect. So whether you call that the Mosaic Law, the Law of God, common law, natural law, karma, or something else, it works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD. It's automatic. AIDS, herpes, and VD, the automatic penalty for adultery. Now, for more information, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to the website georgegordon.org, click onto the email, send an email request for that free general law CD package. That's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about this thing of the root of all evil, money, the root of all evil. Actually, it's a root. There's more than one route to evil, but money is certainly a big one. And we spend a lot of time, effort, and energy trying to make money. So this week I've been pointing out that there are 23 articulable laws, subject matters of law, in the Bible that tell you how to use money, how to gain wealth. Last time we talked about how to buy a house. And we've been breaking so many laws for so long. You know, laws like usury. We go out and we buy a house and we pay interest on it. And then it triggers an automatic rule. It's called the rule of 72. You just take the interest rate and divide it into 72, and that'll tell you how long it takes to double. That puts you into geometric progression. So typically when you buy a house, you buy one for you and two for the banker. Right now you buy one for you and one for the banker. Interest rates are below 5% in many cases. That'll be short-lived now that everybody has remortgaged his house and maxed it out, and there's very few free and clear properties in the United States. Everybody's bought in to the credit program of the Federal Reserve. So that when the economy does finally turn turtle, then you're going to find a tremendous shift in ownership of property. Tremendous shift. And I submit to you that in all probability this is the precursor to the mark of the beast, because with everybody in debt Just picture this. Another Great Depression comes, an economic collapse. The bankers, the politicians, and the preachers say, well, it's all the fault of gold. That's an archaic, old economic practice, and it's bad, wicked, terrible, awful, and evil, and we've got to do away with that gold and money, the root of all evil, and we'll go to the cashless society. And I submit that that's probably what's coming next, the cashless society. And all you'll need is an implantable chip in your hand and forehead, and that'll solve your problem. And they'll let you keep your house and let you keep your car. And when faced with giving up your house and your car, you will go down and get your mark. Just bank on it. So if you're going to avoid the mark of the beast, you better be thinking ahead of time. And what are you going to do to pay the rent, buy the food, and put some threads on you when the money system disappears? It doesn't go on forever. The Great Depression of the 1930s ended. They all do. And there's life after the Depression. In fact, there's money to be made in depressions. And you should be positioning yourself right now to be making great profits off of the suffering and the anguish of those that don't practice, don't prepare. You know, there's a principle in the Scripture called the parable of the 10 virgins. You'll see it in Matthew chapter 25. And there's these 10 virgins, and 5 of them have oil and 5 of them don't, and the bridegroom comes, and or whatever this event is. And so the 5 that don't have the oil go to the 5 that do, and they say, hey, give us some of your oil. And the 5 that have the oil say, well, wait a minute. If we give you our oil, then we won't have enough. And if we don't have enough, we might as well not have any at all. Now, it's not my fault that you weren't prepared for this. You've been told. You've been warned. We've been preparing and been expecting this. You've heard the story of the ant and the grasshopper, haven't you? You know, these old-timey nursery rhymes or parables, you know, that we've heard all of our lives, you know, have real meaning in the real world. And we Americans have been divorced from the real world for so long that when tough times come, I don't think we're going to know how to behave. So the 5 that have the oil say, no, we're not going to share with you. You know, you had your opportunity to prepare for this, and you should have had your own. And that's what I've been telling my students for 20, 21 years now, is that, you know, you should be prepared for this oven by yourself. Don't depend upon me. Don't depend upon the government. Don't depend upon somebody else, the insurance company or anybody else. You depend upon you. Prepare for yourself. And you'll probably be a whole lot less disappointed than you are when you rely upon the insurance company, the bank, the church, or somebody else. Gifts, bribes, and rewards is one of the laws that God told us that he wanted us to practice. And he says, you shall take no gift, for the gift blinds the wise and perverts the words of the righteous. For the eternal your God is a God of God and Lord of lords, a great God, a mighty and a terrible, which regardeth not persons, nor taketh reward. God says he's not bribable, but you know, we Americans practice bribery openly now. When I was a kid, bribery was looked upon and frowned upon. It was something that nobody wanted to do, or at least get caught doing. Today it's common, it's rampant. Let me give you a couple illustrations. You know about lobbyists in Washington, D.C., and these lobbyists go to your congressman and legislator and, you know, your representatives and senators, and they say, hey, we'd like to have this or that bill passed. You know, it's one thing to go in and talk to your legislator and say, here's my position, here's what I want. It's something else to give him some kind of a reward. Now, bribery is against the law in the United States, and so we have a very high art form of bribery. The way it works is fairly simple. Merck and Pfizer or some pharmaceutical company wants some law passed, like Dick Armey put a rider on a bill that prohibits people from suing the pharmaceutical company for any damages caused by a vaccine. So These vaccines have mercury in them, and this mercury causes autism and a number of other ailments. And to prevent the consumer from suing the maker, this legislator, Dick Armey, put this rider on in the Senate and the House, voted it in, and the president signed it. Now, how much do you think Dick Armey got paid for that? Well, he got something for it. I don't know what, but he got something. And one of the common things that they do is to pick up the expenses for vacations. So they'll put the vacation of a congressman or a senator, say, over in Hawaii at the Marriott Regency Hotel, and then the pharmaceutical company picks up or pays the bill. That's okay. You can do that. You can't give this senator or representative $10,000, but you can pay these expenses. Now, here's a neat story of an example of gifts, bribery, and lobbying. 2 years ago, farmers who owned the massive ethanol plant on the edge of Marshall, Minnesota, had no idea that the company was for sale. But the chief executive running the Minnesota Corn Processors Cooperative knew differently. L. Daniel Thompson had met secretly with a top official at rival Archer Daniels Midland Company to discuss a sale of the company. Thompson told his ADM contact that he might be able to convince the farmers to accept a lower price for their co-op than at least some of them had in mind. My thoughts are that I'm the only person that could get them to accept a lower number, Thompson said in a handwritten letter faxed to ADM, the agribusiness giant based in Decatur, Illinois. As part of the transaction, Thompson said that he would expect ADM to buy out his $1.5 million contract, and he also wanted some ADM shares of a reasonable amount once the deal is completed, Thompson wrote. So on September 6, 2002, ADM bought the company for $396 million in cash, boosting its position as the dominant player in the market for ethanol, the widely used fuel additive made from corn. As ethanol has soared along with oil prices, recriminations followed, culminating in a bitter court fight alleging bad faith on the part of Thompson. The case has fed long-standing resentments among independent-minded farmers against the consolidation of agriculture in the hands of a few global titans such as ADM. It makes my blood boil every time I think about it, to think of the money that everyone could be making if we still owned the company, said former co-op director Steve Lipsky. For the farmers who started the co-op 20 years ago, selling out was bittersweet. Many were getting on in years and welcomed a chance to cash in on their holdings. ADM's purchase price represented three times the value the co-op had assigned to their privately held shares. And partly because of Thompson's lobbying efforts in favor of the buyout, many were convinced that the ethanol market was tanking and that it was time to get out. Thompson, who moved to Texas shortly after the transaction was completed, defended his actions in a recent statement to the Chicago Tribune, noting that 82% of the shareholders voted in favor of it. Well, there's an example of gifts and bribery, a practice that's prohibited in the scriptures, but it's so common in business. When I was in the contracting business in Oakland, California, I wanted to get in on a lucrative end of the business, which was a fire repair. So I went to my insurance agent and I said, hey, I'd like to get in and bid on some of those jobs. And he said, well, there's two companies here in Oakland that get that work, and they have to pay a kickback. And if you want to pay a kickback, you could probably get in on it also. But that's the way business is done with the insurance companies. Now, I didn't want to practice gifts and bribes. I didn't want to degenerate into bribery. So I couldn't get in on that lucrative end of the contracting business in Oakland, California. So I'm familiar with what goes on. And same thing happens with building inspectors. Building inspectors are bought off. A bottle of whiskey, a little money under the table, a Christmas present. You remember when Hurricane Andrew hit, you know, Florida's got some pretty tough building standards. And did you notice that houses that were supposed to be built to withstand 140 mile an hour winds didn't? Yeah, they weren't up to the current standards. And those are building inspectors that do that. And it's the big building contractors that are saving money. I know if they can save $100 or $1,000 on every unit, and you're putting up 1,000 units, you know, 1,000 houses in a subdivision or a group of subdivisions at $100 each, you know, that's $100,000. 100 houses, $1,000, 100,000. 1,000 houses, $100. Think about it. Now, there's another law here that we violate, and it comes back to haunt us. It's called the inheritance law. In America, we call it the death tax. And we have an inheritance tax, and it comes under the fourth plank to the Communist Manifesto. And it's triggered by the marriage license. So we go out and get marriage licenses, and we create three-party limited general partnerships with the state. That's what a marriage license is, a three-party limited general partnership. It's a contract with a foreign and alien god, which is prohibited in Exodus 23, verses 32 and 33. You know, these treaties that we make, like GATT and NAFTA, we do that at the national and international level, you know, like NATO and CETO and so on. But we also make these contracts at the personal and the individual level. We get licenses with these foreign and alien gods like Kentucky and Wyoming and California and New York and Canada and Australia and New Zealand and so on. These are sovereign powers. God told us to practice His law. Don't practice the law of Australia, New Mexico, and New York. But we, you know, we didn't pay attention. And so as a result of that, there are penalties to be paid. So when you get this marriage license, it brings you under that fourth plank to the Communist Manifesto. And so when your husband dies, ladies, you say to yourself, well, you know, now I'm going to inherit everything. And the state comes in and says, buy me out. Now, the one good thing, George Bush says we ought to eliminate that death tax. You know, under the biblical law, when you die, you pass your inheritance on to the next generation. There's no tax to pay. God never put a penny's worth of tax on the property that moves from one generation to the next. That comes from communism. That comes from practicing communism instead of the Ten Commandments. But as a sideline, the trigger that causes it is that marriage license, and it just so happens that the state comes in and the death tax is 28 to 35%, just one-third of that three-party limited general partnership. Isn't that just special? So George Bush, to his credit, wants to abolish that, and I hope they do. It'd be good for all of us, but it's a penalty that we pay when we violate these statutes, such as the inheritance law. Now, I teach a school here called the Mosaic Law, and it covers 133 subjects of law in the Bible. Inheritance is one of them. In fact, inheritance is number 61, and they're all in alphabetical order. They're in alphabetical order from Aaronic priests to work. And there's 133 of them, and they embrace 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments. When you practice those, you get a benefit. When you violate those, you get a blot. You get a penalty. That's just the way law works. There's no such thing as a law without a penalty. Because if you had a law without a penalty, then you wouldn't have a law. You'd have a suggestion. All right, hang on. We've got to take a break here. We'll be right back, and we'll talk a little more about these 23 laws that deal with this thing of money. Stand by. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Well, here's an interesting statement. It says, "Then Peter and the other apostles answered and said that we ought to obey God rather than men." That comes from Acts verse 5, or chapter 5, verse 29. You know, that's a revolutionary concept. And it's impossible to put into practice unless you know the law yourself. Now, can you imagine yourself actually telling a policeman or a judge that the law of God supersedes the law of the state? Well, there are actually three sources of authority that support Peter's position in Acts 5, verse 29. The First Amendment to our federal constitution is number one. Public law 97-280 is the second. And the Supreme Court's decision in United States versus Seeger is the third. Now, do you know the scriptural law to cite in support of your position on, say, the census or public school or social security, vaccinations, or whatever issue that you may be bringing up, or the many other issues or laws of the scripture that conflict with the laws of the state? And do you know how to look them up, research them out, or code plead the law to use the scripture to defend yourself against state and federal incursion into your constitutionally protected rights? Because if you don't know the law of the scripture and you don't know the law of the state, then you're in no position to challenge either one, now are you? Now, if you're tired of being a biblical illiterate with the police and public officials kicking sand in your face, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? Now, that's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call right now and order yours. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Now, the Mosaic Law School is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, just go to the website, georgegordon.org, click onto the email. Send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. And what I'm doing right now is I'm taking about 6 or 8 of these various laws. We'll just take one like number 133, which deals with work. You know, work is a very important aspect to making money. Americans, at least many of us, are type A workaholics. I used to be one of those type A workaholics. I've kind of slowed down now. I don't get nearly as excited as I used to when I was in my 20s and 30s. But you know, we work and we don't get as far ahead as we think we ought to. And so we work harder, thinking that if we work harder, we'll get ahead. We'll make the money that we think we ought to. Instead of taking time to go into the restaurant and sit down to eat, we'll drive up to the drive-thru and we'll eat as we drive down the street. I mean, we Americans have gotten to the point where we don't take the time to even stop and eat. We eat on the go. Well, hard work has its good points. There's no doubt about that. But there's a law that's in force here that maybe you hadn't known about. In Genesis 2, on the seventh day, God ended his work which he had made, and he rested on the seventh day from all of his work which he had made. And God blessed the seventh day, and he sanctified it, because that in it he had rested from all of his work which God created and made. So God worked 6 days and rested one. I used to work 7 days a week and about, I don't know, anywhere from 14 hours a day, typically, a little bit more sometimes. I never worked an 8-hour day in my life. I don't even work 8 hours a day now. I typically will work until I'll get started maybe at 9 in the morning, and I won't quit until midnight. I'll get up in the morning and go to work, and you know, I just kind of putter around. I don't work hard like I used to, but I work a lot of hours. But you know, one day a week I take off, and that's because it's a law. And in Exodus 12:16, the first day there shall be a holy convocation, and in the seventh day there shall be a holy convocation to you. There are certain days of the year that we're prohibited from working. 7 annual holy days and 1 day out of 7, called the weekly Sabbath. And Exodus 20 says, 6 days shall you labor. Exodus 20, verses 9 and 10. 6 days shall you labor and do all of your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Eternal your God. And in it shall you not do any work. Now, we Americans used to practice the Sabbath in this country. I mean, this country shut down on Sunday when I was a kid. It loosened up after about 1950 with the repeal of the Blue Laws. And there's a number of court cases that were decided. The Jews primarily challenged that. They said, look, we got to take off on Saturday. It's a Sabbath. And it's unfair to us to take off Saturday and Sunday. And the law requires that we close our stores on Sunday. So Jews should be allowed to open their stores on Sunday and work Sunday through Friday. Now, of course, today we can do that. In those days, you couldn't. The law required that you close your store on Sunday. In fact, when I was a kid, the mill in Corbell, California closed down right in the middle of World War II. You'd have thought if there was an ox in the ditch, that was it, wouldn't you? By golly, Saturday night, boy, the world shut up. And you couldn't buy a gallon of gas on Sunday. You couldn't buy a meal. You couldn't get a bag of potato chips. I mean, you couldn't buy anything. Nothing was open. Nothing was open. Zero. Now picture that. Today you'd say, well, the world would come to an end if all the businesses closed on Sunday or Saturday or any other day of the week. No, it's not true. And furthermore, I would submit to you that in 1943, my granddad could support his family on what he earned by himself, and so could my dad in 1955, but now more than 50% of the females in America are in the workforce. It takes both of you to make a living, and you're going further behind. And one of the laws that you're breaking is the Sabbath. And when you quit breaking the Sabbath, you'll actually make more money. And really, your problem isn't in making more money. The problem is in handling the money that you have more efficiently. Now, I mentioned this, that when you're paying usury and interest, you know, just take Social Security and income tax takes a third. Your interest takes 15%. Once you start practicing these laws and you save 33% from income tax and Social Security and 15% on usury charges and get out from under that mortgage, I pointed out to you earlier on in this series, I only have to make 40% of what most of you people have to make to live that $100,000 lifestyle. It's just the way you manage the money that you have based upon the laws that you practice. So there's the law on work. Now let's take a look at the law on theft. I was giving a school, or doing a school up in Marengo, Illinois. And theft deals with property and property rights. Now, we Americans no longer practice property and property rights. We practice from each according to his ability and to each according to his need. And young mothers today scold their children into sharing their toys with the other children. Instead of teaching their children that their toys are theirs and that's their property, we have abandoned property and property rights in favor of share and share alike. Now, when I was a kid, they used to tell us a story about the pilgrims. And they put all of their food, when they got over here, they all went out and worked and put all of their food into a common storehouse. And then everybody took out of the common storehouse as they needed it. And that first winter, they damn near starved to death. So the Indians showed them a little better way. That they, instead of having one storehouse, should have a storehouse in every family. Every family should have its own storehouse. And every family should be free to go out and produce as much or as little of whatever it is that they wanted to produce. Put it in their storehouse, and they found out, whoa, lo and behold, they had a great abundance. I don't know if that story's true or not, but that's what I was taught. And that's the basis of this thing called the free market. Now, in the final analysis, if you stop and think about it, everybody has to produce enough for himself. And what Americans are doing today, for instance, in our county here, the highest status that you can achieve in Ozark County, Missouri, is total disability on Social Security. Total disability. That's the highest status you can achieve. That's where you produce absolutely nothing and consume much. Well, every one of those people that's on total disability is producing nothing, and those of us that are producers have to produce 100% for ourselves. Plus, we got to produce a little bit more as a collective unit to feed all of those drones out there that are on total disability. Now, most of the people that I know of here, the other day we called a guy and said, "Hey, would you like to come over and work?" And no, he didn't want to work because he's on total disability. And he called another guy and said, "Do you want to work?" And he said, "Well, do you hire any of those Joneses?" And, well, yeah, we had Shirley Jones over, and we had a couple of Joneses. "Well, I don't work if you guys have the Joneses over there working." So we got a kind of a caste system here around my neck of the woods. And so this guy's on total disability. Now, he works under the table for cash on total disability. Well, all of these guys that are out here working, at least that I know of around here, are all working under the table. There isn't one of them that's totally disabled, but they're all on total disability. Not only is that a theft, the people that participate in it and feed them are enablers. So I thought, well, I'll get out of that program. So that's another reason why I thought I'd drop out of that tax program. I didn't want to contribute to the delinquency of all of these people over here on disability. Now, I was up in Marengo, Illinois, giving a tax class, and there was a preacher in the class, and he said to me, "You're teaching all these people to lose their salvation." Listen to that. He said, "You're teaching all these people to lose their salvation." I said, "Why do you say that?" He said, "Well, this law that you're teaching here, the law of Moses, the law of God, it was nailed to the cross with Jesus. It's been abolished and done away with." Do you hear that? Abolished and done away with. I didn't know that. I told him, "Well, thank you so much for telling me. I didn't know that." I said to him, "What makes you say that?" And so he preached me a sermon for about 5 minutes about Jesus and him crucified. And I said, "Well, that's very interesting. Let's test your theory here for a minute." And behind me there was a whiteboard, so I turned around and I wrote the number 759 up there. And I said to this preacher, I said, now you've heard it said by them of old time, thou shalt not commit adultery. And he said he did. And I said, now I disagree with you. I don't believe that the law of God has been abolished and done away with and nailed to the cross with Jesus. I don't believe that. I believe that every law that Moses gave us out at Mount Sinai is in full force and effect today. And Jesus said so plainly in Matthew 5:17-20. But let's test it for a minute and see if maybe you don't agree. And he said, well, he absolutely didn't agree, and that the law was abolished and nailed to the cross with Jesus. So I said, well, all right, Pilgrim, here's what I would propose. He's sitting there next to his wife, and I said, well, I want to take your wife home tonight with me and commit adultery with her. Can you tell me what's wrong with that? Well, now, that's about the worst thing you can say to a Christian, ain't it? You know, I want to take your wife home and sleep with her. So he thought about that for a minute, and there's about, 10 or 12 people gathered around the podium. We were on break, during this tax class, and a few people were around, about 80 people in the class, and there's 10 or 12 of them gathered around us listening to this little conversation. And so he thunk about that for a second, and he said, well, you see, that law hasn't been abolished. So I turned around and I wrote the number 1 under my 759 with a minus sign. And then I subtracted 1 from 759 and I wrote 758. So I said, well, you agree with me that thou shalt not commit adultery hasn't been abolished and nailed to the cross with Jesus. And he said, yeah, that's right. Well, he was tape recording this conversation. And he had one of these big old 1983 model boomboxes, sitting on the table there in front of him, and it was plugged in. So I reached down and I took a hold of the cord that was plugged into the outlet, and I snapped it right out of the outlet. That was the end of the recording. He was shocked, looked at me with a big gaping mouth, and I picked up his tape recorder and I looked at him and I said, "Mine." And he looked at me like I was Mort from work. And he was so shocked by my aberrant behavior that he said, "That's my tape recorder." And so I blurted right back at him, "No, it isn't. It's my tape recorder. I just took it. Mine." Because the law that says thou shalt not steal has been abolished and nailed to the cross with Jesus. And what we've replaced it with is from each according to his ability and to each according to his need. Well, he thunk about that for a couple of minutes or a couple of few seconds, and he said, "Well, that law hasn't been abolished either." So I wrote another one under the 758 with a minus sign, drew a line, and then I wrote 757. I said, "Now, listen, there's 759 of these laws, and I can take you through all 759 of them. Actually, there's only 133, because, you know, you take this theft statute here, and I'm just looking, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 8. There's 8 statutes on the theft law. So you got 133 laws, and several of them have more than one statute. For instance, thou shalt not steal is recorded in Exodus 20, and it's also recorded in Deuteronomy chapter 5. Exodus 20 and Deuteronomy chapter 5. So there's two places. And there's a number of other statutes that deal with theft. And so there's 133 of these subjects, and theft is one of them that you need to master. Now, we Americans have gone wholesale into theft. We steal from our government by going on total disability when there's nothing wrong with us. We can go out and work, but we know how to play the system. So we're going to go out and we're going to get our share. We're going to live. We're going to make our living off of somebody else's labor. And then people justify that and say, "Well, these dirty capitalist businessmen, they do that. You know, they hire all these employees and they make a profit off of them." Well, making a profit off of your employee is a contract. That's an agreement that you make. But lying and stealing disability, or when you fill out an insurance form, you always fudge on it, you know. You want to make a little extra. I mean, you don't tell the insurance company all the facts. You know, you fudge on the facts and you steal from the insurance company. Stealing in America is a fine art. It's an art form. I was at a seminar one time in New York City at Queens College, and some of the people came up and wanted to pay with food stamps. They wanted to buy books with food stamps. Now, you know, you can't buy books with food stamps. And in New York City, food stamps are a part of the underground economy. Those people don't need food stamps. They're not hungry. They're using those food stamps because they can qualify. They know how to get in and qualify. So we steal from government. We steal from insurance companies. We Americans steal with Federal Reserve notes, and we don't even think about it. We go in and we buy things, and we pay for it with worthless paper. Well, they're stealing from me. They don't give me gold and silver when they pay me on payday. Well, keep in mind that there's a penalty for theft, and every time you steal, you have to pay 2, 4, 5, or 7 times the amount you steal. And there's this guardian angel, Big Mike, over here, who's exacting a penalty every time you steal. So hang on. We'll be back and talk a little more about the root of all evil being money when we come back. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Well, how many laws did Moses give us in the Mosaic Code? And how many laws has the state given us in our secular law from our secular government? Well, Moses gave us 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, and the state, at last count, has given us 2.5 million. And they're adding to that at the federal level at the rate of 47 pages a day. Now, the Apostle Peter said that we ought to obey God rather than men in Acts 5, verse 29, and Congress said that we ought to voluntarily apply the teachings of the Scripture in the lives of families, individuals, and societies. And our Supreme Court has said, in Seeger versus United States, they said, quote, there is a higher loyalty than loyalty to this country, and that is loyalty to God. You know, every authority is in agreement. The Congress, the Supreme Court, and God Almighty Himself. The Scriptures are the final authority on law. You probably never heard that before. Now, if you'd like to learn these 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, and how to use them against government intrusion into your God-given rights, it's a right, duty, and obligation that we owe to ourselves. We owe it to our families, and we owe it to our society. Now, here at the law school, we teach all 759 of these statutes, judgments, and commandments, along with the penalties for the violation of these laws. Now, why don't you make it a point to regain your First Amendment right to free exercise this year? Remember, the First Amendment is the gateway to the Second and to your entire Bill of Rights. And the law of God may be old, but it's not old-fashioned, and it's very relevant to our lives and our rights today, and particularly our property rights. Now, if you'd like to learn more, just call and order my free General Law CD package. That's the place to start. That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call and order yours right now. The number is 417-273-4967. And remember, the Mosaic Law School is available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, just go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and send me an email request for that free General Law CD package. That's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, let's take a look at wages, number 125. Most of you listening to me right now are probably wage earners. In fact, most Americans are wage earners. It's not that we were designed that way. I think we'd be better off if we were traders at law on a cash basis. I used to be a wage earner, but I discovered there wasn't any money in wages, and so I decided to quit that and get into something that paid a little better. I was watching the Now people, you know, on PBS, Bill Moyer, and Now, and they were interviewing a lady out in Nevada who was working for minimum wage or a little over that, waiting tables, and she was crying the blues about how she couldn't make ends meet on minimum wage. Or at least she couldn't make as much money and couldn't buy all the things that she wanted to buy on minimum wage. Well, let me share something with you. I'm 65 years old, and I live on a farm. And, of course, what I own here I've already bought and paid for, and I'm not making payments on it. But I can live on $5,000 a year. And I'm not talking about $5,000 in gold. I'm talking about $5,000 in Federal Reserve Note dollars right now today. I can live on that a year. My wife can feed four people for 12.5 cents per serving, 25 cents a meal. Now, you know, we're hillbillies down here, and we know how to use pinto beans and cornbread. And it's not so much in how much you make, it's how you spend it, it's how you use it. Now, I don't want to live on cornbread and pinto beans. I don't mind eating beans and bread once in a while, but I just want to share with you that beans and bread now, cornbread, is a complete protein. And you can live and you'll get healthy on that. Americans live at McDonald's. Americans eat fat, blood, and salt. And they pay a lot of money for it. McDonald's is a pretty expensive place to eat. I mean, I've been in there a time or two. I used to like their coffee because it was hot, but they can't make hot coffee anymore because You know, it burns people that evidently can't handle hot coffee, so they need a guardian. But anyway, the moral of the story is that McDonald's isn't the cheapest place to eat. And the reason that I share this with you is because we Americans, before we got on to total disability and welfare and food stamps and etc., we had to live, and we had to live on what we could produce. Every family had to produce for itself. Some families ate better than other families, but all of them ate. They might eat pretty poor, you know, beans and cornbread, but they were always eating. And it doesn't take too much to produce a year's supply of beans and cornbread. Now, I've got a little garden down here. It's about 2,400 square feet, and I can feed 6 people off of that 2,400 square feet 365 days a year. Most Americans couldn't do that. I mean, the average Joe Sixpack, he'd starve to death. He wouldn't have a clue as to what to do outside of Kroger's, Safeway, or Piggly Wiggly. But the reason I bring this up is because you're working for wages, and you make these wages, and you're unable to buy what you need. So what makes you think that working for wages is profitable? And I think most of you'd say, well, it's the only thing I know. And you're exactly right. You don't know anything else. This waitress, it's the only thing she knows. She cannot think outside the box. It has never occurred to her to quit working for minimum wage and to go out and make some money. She doesn't know how to sell. She doesn't know how to sell real estate. She doesn't know how to buy and sell and make a profit. She's been to public school, I'm sure. I doubt if this woman is stupid. I don't think that she's mentally handicapped. And you know, you've got millions of people all over America, wage earners, and they're getting lied to, ripped off, and stolen from, and the primary theft comes from government. They're taking income tax and Social Security from you people, which amounts to about a third. And let me tell you something. If you're on disability and if you've made it, you know, you've arrived at the highest status in life you can get on, and you're not paying any taxes, and you're drawing out of Social Security, you're paying all the taxes. You're paying all the taxes. Now, let me explain this tax thing to you so you can grasp this. When you're going into a motel and you want to rent a room, you know the price of the room is $5. And the other $40 that you pay on this room over here is taxes. I can remember when I was a kid, when you wanted to stay in a pretty good hotel, $5 was the rate. It cost you $5 to stay in a hotel. Now, you could stay in a little poor hotel for about $3.50. And if you wanted to stay in a dive, you know, $2. And if you wanted a bed for the night, you could sleep in a flop house for 4 bits. So it was going to range somewhere between 50 cents and $5. Now, I've noticed even the Motel 6s are up around $30, $40 a night. And that's why they called it the Motel 6, because they charge $6 a night. Now listen. The reason that they're charging $30 is because of inflation. And inflation is caused by taxes. And so here in Springfield the other day, they said they wanted to put on a penny sales tax on the motel rooms. Well, all that does is raise the price of the motel rooms. Now, let me tell you, here's what really hurts the wage earner. See, the wage earner, or the guy working for a minimum wage, or the guy that's on total disability, he has what we call a fixed income. You retired people on Social Security, you got a fixed income. My income isn't fixed. If I need more money this month, I'll sell another school or two. I'll get up earlier, and I'll call more people, and I'll hustle, and I'll go sell another school. And if I'm lazy and I've got plenty and I don't need to, then I'll sleep in later. And then I won't sell as many schools. So my income isn't fixed. Other people's incomes, that is, most people's income is fixed. And if you're a wage earner, your income is fixed. I mean, you're getting $127 a week, and that's all you're going to get next week. And you got to live within that income within that budget. So when the prices go up down at the motel, we're actually taxing you. The motel passes that tax on to you, and you're the guy that gets burned. People like me, we just go out and raise our prices. We just go out and sell more product, and it doesn't affect us. So when the price of gasoline goes up a nickel or a dime, it hurts that lady that I'm telling you about that's waiting tables. Doesn't bother me. Now, being able to manage your money and being able to live on your wages, there's a law here. There's an economic law that deals with wage earners. And I happen to practice this law, but it's in Leviticus 19:13. It says, "You shall not defraud your neighbor, neither rob him. The wages of him that is hired shall not abide with you all night until the morning." Now, I'm an old-timey businessman, and I used to pay my men on Friday night once a week. When I was a wage earner, when I first started, I got paid once a month. Now, what that is when I work and I don't get paid at the end of the day, my boss is getting an interest-free loan for that day. When he pays me at the end of the week, he gets 5, 6, or 7 days of work. And they don't pay you this week. They pay you at the end of next week. So you're always a week behind, aren't you? And if you get paid twice a month, that is every 2 weeks, then what's happening is that they've got a 2 week. Or how about your vacation pay? You know, when they don't pay you your vacation pay at the end of every day, they get an interest-free loan, don't they? And so they got that money in the bank, and they use that in their average daily balance. Well, God said that that's a crime. That's a theft. It's against the law. You got to pay this guy at the end of every day. I know it's a hassle and it's a pain, and you're not going to do it, and nobody wants to do it. But if you don't follow these laws, there are penalties that come up from it. So when I pay people here, I pay them on a casual labor, daily rate. At the end of the day, I see old Shirley is out there working today, looking out my window here. And at the end of the day, Shirley's going to get paid the amount of money that she gets paid every day. And I don't think that that's near as big a burden as people would say. I know General Motors isn't going to pay all you people at the end of every day, but that's what the law requires. And the reason that I practice that law, it's just one of 23 laws here, that when you practice it and you put that whole package together, you come out better at the end of the day, at the end of the month. All right, let's take a look at the last one here, a big one here called usury. And usury deals with a thing called collateral, because nobody's going to lend you any money. Now, here's your boss. He's borrowing your labor, borrowing your money. He doesn't pay you at the end of every day. He gives you your 2 weeks paid vacation at the end of the year or your 30 days, and you go, wow, boy, ain't this really great. Or the government takes your tax money, and then at the end of the year, they give it back to you interest-free. Now, you'd think that the government ought to pay you interest on that refund check, don't you think? They don't. But every time that you go out and borrow money, they make you pay interest. What a ripoff. Ripoff. That's a theft. Well, usury is a theft. And if you lend money to any of my people that is poor by you, you shall not be to him as a usurer, neither shall you lay upon him usury. If you at all take your neighbor's raiment to pledge, that's collateral, you shall deliver it unto him by that the sun goes down, for that is his covering only, it is his raiment for his skin, wherein shall he sleep, and it shall come to pass when he cries out to me that I'll hear because I'm gracious. So it requires that you cry out to God when you're being oppressed. Most people don't do that, and so there's no relief. And there's another big ripoff that we've got in our state passed by Governor Holden. He was a Democrat. And our Democratic maybe it wasn't Holden. Maybe it was the guy before him that got killed in that plane crash. I think it probably was. And in our Democratic legislature, it's called a title loan, car title loan. And they charge 9.9% interest per month. That's 118% interest per year. And who do you think that gouges? It gouges the poorest people in our society. The guys that are so desperate for money, for whatever purpose, that they have to go out and pledge their car title. Now, not only are they charging them an outrageous interest at 118% a year, but they also collateralize the note. They won't give you the full value of the car. They'll only give you 50 cents on the dollar. So here you are getting half the value of your car. And then in addition to that, in addition to half the value of the car, is the amount that they're going to loan you, they charge you 118%, so they collateralize the note, rob you of half, and then charge you interest. And that's legal and lawful. My gosh, that's sanctioned by the government. Now, you'd think that somebody ought to be out there to protect you, but you know, the guy that goes in and makes the application for that loan is called an accessory before and after the fact. You know, we couldn't take advantage of you if you didn't come in here and sign up, and we wouldn't be able to take advantage of you if you weren't so hard-pressed for money. And why is it, partner, that you're so hard-pressed for money? Well, you're violating 22 of these other laws. And these other 22 laws have economic consequences, and these economic consequences keep building up on you. You know, if you're working for wages and you're not getting paid at the end of every day, well, then you're an accessory before and after the fact, if you knew about that law. So, you know, it's incumbent upon you to know what the law is and practice the law so that you don't get taken advantage of. I don't let people steal from me. I don't let the government steal taxes and Social Security money from me. I don't let banks steal from me or gouge me. I don't let loan sharks take advantage of me by taking my car title. And I don't allow myself to get into the bind. And the reason that I don't allow that is because I practice these 23 economic laws, and I would submit to you that if you'd practice them, you'd come out better. And why is it that those preachers, those holy joes and sky pilots out there, aren't teaching the 65% of you that go to church every Sunday these 23 laws? How come? Why is that? Well, we're about out of time. So we're going to have to leave it right there. And I'm going to tell you a little story. Oh, here it is. I think I got it right here. Nope, I don't have it there. Well, I'm not going to tell you that story. Got about a minute here left, so let me remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're going to have to cut it off here. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Gordon Law School and the Law Hour, please go to the website. That's georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It's open to individuals by prearrangement. And the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on the website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, there's my signal. It says time's up. See you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.